You don't consume a show, you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't consume music, you listen to it.
Right.
Like, these are different senses mm-hmm. that you then have to consciously think about the way you are watching something, or the way you are listening to something, the way you are reading something. Because to use the word consume implies a weird digestive system. And then it's out of your system, and then what is it? It's gone, it's forgotten. Yeah. Like, I don't think anybody wants their, whatever they're making, to be that way.
Hey everyone, welcome to Honey and Hustle. I am your host, Angela Hollowell, and today I'm speaking with Taylor Adams, who is the founder of Scrapped Productions. It's always great speaking to another fellow filmmaker, and by the end of this episode, you will learn how to pivot your niche or your purpose while maintaining your creative integrity. Thanks so much for joining us today. This podcast is free and will always be free and available on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Good Pods, Heytai, you name it. While it's free for you to consume, it's not free for us to create. We pay our video editors, writers, production assistant, and operations manager for helping us make this show come to life. If you'd like to support us in making this show, please consider subscribing to our Substack community, using our affiliate links, or just simply sharing the show with someone who might enjoy it. All right, let's get into this conversation. As far as I know, your creative career started at North Carolina State University here in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
And you started kind of in the athletic department, making mm-hmm. films and videos with them.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about, you know, your career start there and kind of how that's led to where you are now.
Sure.
Maybe not that big of a chunk. That's a really big question. Let's just start with North Carolina State and we'll just go from there.
Sure. Yeah. How I got started working with NC State. Well, I graduated from NC State in 2009. First job out of college, I was a car salesman. It was the worst job mm-hmm. I've ever had in my life. All of the connotations you think of when you think of used car salesman, those are my coworkers.
So he's saying he was definitely a sleazy guy. Basically, it's what I'm hearing.
I like to think I was one of the ones who wasn't. Okay. However, there were people like that there. Yeah. I wasn't enjoying myself.
Yeah.
But eventually, I got to a point where I was able to get some unpaid internships in production. Mm-hmm. Worked over at Trailblazer Studios for a little bit. All the while working 5 to 7 days a week, waiting tables, tending bar. And about 2010, I think one of my friends from college was an intern at the NC State Athletic Department, specifically with their website.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did about a year internship and decided he was going to move on, but recommended me mm-hmm. as a replacement. So ended up getting that job, which was great. Primarily my, you know, responsibilities were making sure the weekly press conference was streaming live for everyone, uploading tennis match highlights. So a lot of it had to do with, it was very specifically like website oriented, like mm-hmm. uploading and make sure everything was streaming on there. Learned a lot of like technical stuff that is since outdated. Like if I tried to do that now, I don't think I could. And I'd look at it and be like, this is backwards. You just get OBS or something.
Mm-hmm.
But while I was working there, in the same building, in the same kind of connected office, there was the producer for their TV show. I mean, their weekly TV show ran from like football season through the end of basketball season. And I really wanted to work at TV. I didn't realize that until probably like my last year of college. I knew I wanted to make something, videos, TV, film, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when I figured out I wanted to work on TV, I was like, oh, hey, this guy is working in TV. Let me, you know, cozy up and see if I can, you know, offer anything or just try to help in any way I can.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to help out on a couple of different things, which was nice. Edit small segments or operate B-cam for something. Ended up having a pretty good relationship with him to the standpoint of when he left, I was recommended as his replacement.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I kind of took over from there. I started off working... the format of the show was very much like a talk news show. Host sits down with a coach, talks about the game. Hey, what happened there? But there were also interspersed different segments or features, either on a player or something to do with like homecoming or something like that. There's one piece I made about homecoming that I'm really proud of still. And so it was a lot of fun to work on stuff like that. And so that's when I got in that groove of making weekly television. It was 30 weeks straight.
Oh.
I was like, yeah, I like doing this. TV is cool. Like, I already knew it was cool, but I was like, the process of me working on this is I'm enjoying this very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you did that for how long?
So in the format of the talk show, I did that for 3 years, from 2013 to 2016. And then I peaced out. I was tired, man. It was, you know, it's 30 weeks straight of work with maybe 3 days off. Usually a day for Thanksgiving. Because the day after Thanksgiving or the day after that, there is a football game that I have to work. And then around Christmas, like 3 days off, maybe.
Right.
So I did that for 3 years. And then I decided to leave just because I was tired. I wanted to grow. I wanted to do something different. I wanted to see if my skill set could be translated to support myself financially in the freelance world, doing whatever that might be. And so it was during that year that I founded my company, Scrapped. At the time, it started out as a just a media platform. I was making like three different shows. Mm-hmm. We had a show called Drinking While Interviewing, where it was an interview show over drinks, over craft beer. So we had different craft beer every time. We talked a little bit about the beer, but mostly we talked about the guest, what was interesting about them, what drove them, what any projects they have coming up that they want to talk about. Mm-hmm. We had another show that I developed with my partner. Both of her parents emigrated from Vietnam during the war, and it was stories that she had been told by her parents about that experience, and she would, my partner would relay that to camera in like a 5-minute kind of video. That was really cool. It was like very educational and inspirational, very human interest focused. And then we had another show that I worked with Crystal Taylor, the founder and CEO of the Underground Collective here in Durham, where we worked to highlight local hip hop talent. That was a lot of fun. Just for me, like, I'm not a huge hip hop head. I got nothing against it. I just don't expose myself to the music. But doing that show was really cool to see all the different acts and all the different types of art and the poetry that is happening in the community is really cool. Really cool.
That is a wild statement coming from someone in the Triangle. Like, you have so much hip hop here, you know?
Oh, but it is here. I'm not from here though. So, okay. I mean, that maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah.
But for me, like, it didn't matter that it was hip hop. It could have been any other musical genre that I wasn't accustomed to.
Okay.
But if it happens to be prevalent in the area that I whatever happened to be in, that like I'm not into country music. But if I moved to Nashville and there was like, you know, I'm working on the country music scene there, I'd be like, this guy is writing some really deep stuff that isn't about broken down trucks and his dog dying. Yeah. Like, this is interesting.
Yeah.
So it didn't really have to do with the subject matter. For me specifically, it had to do with the subject matter that was something that I didn't know. And so that was interesting to me.
Okay. So kind of like a learning plus entertainment.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely. But for me, looking back on it now with Scrapped, my goal was to, you know, be successful as a freelancer, and I'm going to do it with this quote unquote media platform.
Mm-hmm.
And so that attitude was in the back of my head, and I think that served kind of detrimental to my purpose. Because I was commodifying the stuff I was making. I wanted it to be a means for me to make a living. Not that there's anything wrong with turning art into a way to make a living, but when that's the motivation, I feel like you can, that's some like tricky ground you're trotting over. And looking back on it, I think I should have had a better approach with that. I wasn't like disrespectful, but I feel like there could have been a more well-intentioned purpose behind what I was trying to do, but I still very much enjoyed making the stuff that I did and formed some really cool and lasting relationships doing all of it as well.
Yeah, but I mean, that's still like a really unique way to go about trying to make a living, because when like most people say, oh yeah, I went freelance, they mean like I started doing services for other people. So using my creativity to serve someone else's like needs, their business needs, their nonprofit needs, their personal brand needs, whatever that is, versus like, no, I'm going to create my own thing and like see how that goes. You know what I mean? So tell me about the name for Scrapped. How did that come to be?
So for me, part of it was wanted something cool and edgy in one word. At the time, I was like so into Vice stuff. I was like watching all the Vice mini documentaries. I was like, yeah, Vice, that sounds cool. And I was like, looking back at it, I'm like, what an idiot. But I really wanted a name that was quick. Just because I do value simplicity. That's one of the things I want to look forward to. But for me, since I had been kind of, since I started working in TV, when I first started working in TV, a lot of the ideas I want to do were not necessarily ideas that you would see on a typical like sports news show. Mm-hmm. And some of them would be met with like side eyes, or the idea they would almost like toss away, throw in the bin, they would mm-hmm. scrap it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I leaned into that. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to call my company Scrapped, because for me, like, that attitude we sometimes get when we feel other people aren't respecting or acknowledging our creativity, that's where that came from. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was just, all right, I'll just lean into that. Like, and it sounds kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'll spell it with a T as opposed to the past tense of Scrap. and so that's kind of where that name came from. And every once in a while, I think about, does that name still serve the purpose of what I want?
Yeah.
And I doubt it for a while. But ultimately, I do come back to, like, I think my creative journey, wherever it leads and wherever it ends, I think can still have that moniker, because that is the idea that kind of started it all. Why would I change the idea?
Yeah.
I can change the intention behind it, because when I started out, I just wanted to make really cool stuff. So our slogan was, we just want to make dope shit. Mm-hmm. That's still prevalent. I mean, that's still like important to me, but we're pivoting toward make shit that matters. Yeah. Because this might be a tangent, but in the world where everything is labeled the same, mm-hmm. like everything is content, like this is content.
No, it's not. Don't say that.
The photos that are being taken behind the scenes are content.
No, they're not.
The movie you're watching on Netflix is content.
No, it's like, not.
I'm agreeing with you, but that's what everything's being labeled as.
Yes.
And they're not the same.
No.
And so I don't want everything to be the same. Everything should be treated as what it is, not that it's all one thing.
Mm-hmm. So. I agree. Content is such, like, I'm not opposed to the term content creator. I'm not. I think it serves a purpose. What I do feel that is the antithesis of naming something is that everything gets looped into that, because people want to delineate something as a generalist. I feel like content creator is a new term for, like, multimedia specialist or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like this catch-all phrase that can
And even that is anything. Just a fancier term for the same thing.
It is.
It's not even more defined.
No. It's just like, you know, photo, video, graphics, maybe podcasting, editing, mm-hmm. social media, like
newsletters, like anything like that.
Yeah, all wrapped into one. And it's, or a writer in general, mm-hmm. blog writer. And it's just like, those are like completely different skill sets. And like to ask all of this out of one person and not pay them, that's a whole thing, you know?
This is part two of the episode. Where are we going on a tangent about it?
Yes. Or like to say that someone is a content creator and only call them, and they only do one thing. It's like, well, there's a better term for that than content creator if they only do one mm-hmm. thing, right? Like, in my humblest of opinion, and I do not know all, but like, to me, a content creator is someone who like makes content for a specific social media platform, right? Mm-hmm. When you are talking about putting a film on TV, and I'm talking about putting a podcast on YouTube, mm-hmm. that to me means that we are in a separate category, mm-hmm. right? Because like, when I think about how we delineate our artistry, if we are going to do it for money, which we both do mm-hmm. to some degree, it's just like, okay, well, like, if I want to be considered someone who makes something that is meaningful, and makes something that is important to me, first of all, but also important to the people that I'm creating it for, that has nothing to do with money, mm-hmm. right? And content creation serves a purpose, mm-hmm. right? And that's just my tangent for the day. How about that? But that's why I kind of push back on this notion that like, oh, this is content. Netflix is content. No, mm-hmm. it's not. It's a TV show.
100%.
It's a film. Right. It's like, yes. This doesn't serve any other purpose other than to entertain you. If Netflix makes money, great. The writers aren't. We're not going to go there either. But like,
part three of our interview. You know?
But like, people didn't go into this writing room thinking, man, we're going to make billions. They meant like, man, we're going to write something with soul. We're going to write something that's going to stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. You know, that people want to continue watch for a next season, for a next sequel, for a next spinoff, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you focus on the work you know, the word takes on a different connotation. But that's just like my thoughts on that, on creating, for anybody that cares.
No, but it is all, you know, things get lumped into, I'll go on another tangent. One of the things that I don't like using the word hate because it is really strong.
It is.
What I really am not a fan of is when people refer to the verbiage they use when we watch something, listen to something, read something.
Okay.
Consume.
Mm.
Not a fan. Not a big fan. Because for me, it almost feels like a very, I'll get hate mail for this, American term.
Oh, yeah.
In the way that the stereotypical connotations that come with an American are just like, this is our and my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to like consume. I want to eat it up like and not think about it. And that's like when you say that media can be consumed, you're saying that media is fast food.
Yeah.
And that's not good for you.
No.
The mentality and the product, even though, you know, who doesn't every once in a while want like a something, cheeseburger, chicken McNugget, whatever.
TikTok.
I'm sorry, what? no, but like the fact that you consume a thing, you're not thinking about the thing that you're consuming. Like for me, you don't consume a show, you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't consume music, you listen to it.
Right.
Like these are different senses that you then have to consciously think about the way you are watching something or the way you are listening to something, the way you are reading something.
Mm-hmm.
Because to use the word consume implies a weird digestive system and then it's out of your system. And then what is it? It's gone. It's forgotten.
Yeah. Like,
I don't think anybody wants their, whatever they're making to be that way.
Yeah.
As much as things are, you know, have to be rapid paced, like TikTok, Instagram Reels, things that last less than a minute and then are head out, or the TikTok does 10 minutes now, which is weird. But that's just, I think that's not a good way to think about the things that provide education, entertainment, or information.
Yeah. No, for real. Or inspiration, I would add for.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, when I think about TikTok and Instagram, first of all, no shade. I have no problem with these platforms. I don't personally really use them that much or watch things on them that much either, to be fair. But I think, like, too, when we talk about people consuming media, it conflates this idea, which I do not feel is true, which is that people have short attention spans and that they only can be entertained in this one way, in this one, like, short, one-dimensional kind of creating, like, platform. And that's just not the case at all. People are still watching documentaries. People are still watching TV shows, binging TV shows, watching films. Like, none of that has decreased. But what has, you know, really decreased is people's attention span for stuff that doesn't have meat. You know what I'm saying? And the way that we're talking about consuming, just like something that doesn't have, like,
quick and fast calories as opposed to a nutritious experience.
You know what I'm saying? Something they can, like, sink their teeth into. Why are we going into these, like,
Because it's applicable. Because it is applicable. Like, you can draw these same parallels of things that have a lot of meaning in a food sense are good for you.
Yeah.
As opposed to things that serve zero purpose is the cookout milkshake you get.
Yeah.
Which I love a cookout milkshake every once in a while, but, like,
if you ate that
that's not
day,
your diet. It's not good for you.
That's not enough to, like, feed you. And I think, too, what people are starting to learn is, like, TikTok stars, YouTube Shorts channels, like, Instagram Reels stars, like, yeah, you can make a couple bucks off that from AdSense or whatever. But if you want to talk about, like, where the money is, it's, like, getting them off of your short-form content into something more long-term, which is why, like, a lot of TikTokers are like, okay, let me make a YouTube channel, like, after this, right? They're seeing that, like, TikTok cannot be the end-all be-all of, like, the way that they create. And I think really that opens up the window of, like, exploration into long-term thinking, which I think is the beautiful thing about at least trying to be a freelancer if you're a creator, right? Even if it doesn't work out, even if you find that's not for you, even if you're like, you know, I would rather be, like, in-house, in agency, and, like, have a set salary and have a set schedule. Like, you understand what it takes for you and what you gravitate to the most, because honestly, when you think about creating at scale, creating original projects, creating things that you find meaningful, that is not a one-off thing. Mm-hmm. That requires a lot more. That requires sometimes a crew. That requires thinking about how you're going to get paid. It requires thinking about it as a business.
Yeah.
And that requires a lot more than a 60-second attention span, for sure, for a lot of people. So talk to me about your documentary film work. I know you went back to North Carolina State mm-hmm. and said, hey, I want to make documentaries.
Mm-hmm. So after about a year of doing Scrapped and freelance stuff, mm-hmm. I, at that point, had Scrapped as an LLC. It was my company now. Mm-hmm. And so during that year, 2017, Last Chance You came out on Netflix. I don't want to throw around the word revolutionized, but it was definitely a different approach to a sports documentary. Mm-hmm. It was gorgeous. It looked amazing. It was very organic in its flow and didn't have like a disembodied voice kind of narrating things that you didn't really need. Mm-hmm. And so I was really inspired by that format and the fact that we got to get connected with people who were around the program or a part of the program. So at the time I knew NC State was not happy with whoever had taken over doing the work of the TV show. And so I came back to them. I said, hey, I would love to actually come back. If I could do a documentary, would that be cool? And they were like, I gave them a number. And they're like, sure. And I was like, damn it, I should ask for more money.
When they say yes too fast,
I know, but I was excited. I really wanted to make it.
Yeah.
And it was great. I did it for 3 years. Again, mm-hmm. 3 years. I don't know if it was a thing with me in 3 years or whatever, but because the timeline is the same, like it's still 30 straight weeks. Mm. And even more so now because I did a lot of prep because I wanted to make it right. Mm-hmm. So I would start filming like at least a month before the first show even aired. Mm. So like added another month onto my tenure. But it was great. It was awesome. It was well received. We got nominated for an SVG award, which is a sports video group. They do a lot of seminars and conferences on emerging technology within sports as well as storytelling. Mm. So we got nominated for being like best program series. The category was like small production company or network. Mm. And the people I was being nominated amongst were like the Longhorn Network, which is essentially a branch of ESPN.
Yeah.
A show, something by the Big Ten, which is a large network.
Yeah.
And then there was me and Scrap Productions,
yeah.
A team of one mm-hmm. I had a couple unpaid interns because we didn't have any budget. And then I also work well with the NC State video staff. So it's not like I'm the only guy with a camera. Like there's other people with camera capturing footage for other stuff.
Yeah.
But we all worked together to share footage. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we were even nominated for that, I remember sitting in the room like they were going to announce it, my heart was just like going a mile a minute. I was like, am I going to win this thing? Mm-hmm. No, Taylor, you're not going to win this thing. But it was still awesome to be in that room, being nominated amongst people that had been doing this for years, mm-hmm. Both the individuals and the platforms themselves.
Yeah.
And so that was really cool. Got a lot of recognition from sports commentators as well. Wes Durham, the voice of the Atlanta Falcons, and also like he is a sports commentator, play-by-play analyst as well for college football and basketball. Just a really nice guy. He like came up to me at one of our games. I knew who he was, but like
yeah.
We had never spoken before. Mm-hmm. He just came up to me randomly. He's like, hey, love the show. Good job. I was like, thanks, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Holly Rowe, sideline reporter.
Yeah.
She at one point had watched, she never spoke to me, but at one point she was doing prep for a Notre Dame and NC State football game and tweeted that she was watching this show and like had the name of it. I was like, Holly Rowe's watching my show. This is so cool.
Yeah.
And then at one point ESPN reached out, like, can we get the segment that Holly was talking about? And they sent me all these specifications of how they needed the file. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know any of this. So I had to Google how to do all this technical stuff for them.
Yeah.
So just like having a piece of work that I was proud of that got recognition for. Not that I need that to like be validated, but it's nice, you know? And so that was great doing that for 3 years. And then again, kind of ran into a little bit of a burnout thing. Actually, the last documentary show episode I made for NC State was the day that the NBA canceled their season because of the pandemic. Shortly after that, they canceled the ACC tournament. We had played one game and then canceled it. My last shot of my entire run was a bus driving off into the distance.
Oh.
Because it was like, we don't, because the text was like, when the team got there, they found out the NCAA tournament had been canceled. Yeah. End of show.
Yeah. Dang, that's crazy. That's so sad.
I know. I was like, I don't know what else to do, but like, this is it.
Yeah. So speaking of that, you're a freelancer during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit about how that was for you.
From a social standpoint, stressful, as well for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. From a work standpoint, actually not that bad.
Okay.
It was a bit of a pivot because of the type of work that was available. But mm-hmm. for me, one of the things that I feel like I'm better at when it comes to production stuff is editing. I feel like mm-hmm. I'm a very efficient editor. I feel like I'm quick. And especially with all the tight turnarounds I've had to do during TV, like I kind of like developed chops quickly.
Okay.
And so I got a ton of editing gigs during the pandemic. Now it was all the same stuff.
Yeah.
It was all, hey, we can't have our conference or our summit this year,
yeah.
but we need to put together some like speaking panels for our virtual summit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I would sit in on some interviews and like make notes and then like get the footage, cut it together. So
yeah.
That was pretty much kind of what I did. I also did a couple more documentary projects around AAU basketball.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun. AAU was still going on. They were doing all the like the protocol stuff of like very, you know, limited attendance, you know, testing, masking, all this other stuff. And that was a lot of fun to work on that too. So I feel grateful that my skill set allowed me to be relatively consistent during 2020 and into 2021.
Yeah. What I think people underrate when it comes to being an entrepreneur is how to really identify your skill set, right? Mm. I think like being a founder, that's a title. Being a creative director, that's a title. Mm. But what does that really mean, and how can I transfer those skills to maybe smaller projects that kind of make ends meet between the bigger projects, the original projects, things like that? And I think for me, you know, I started off as a photographer, so I wasn't necessarily directly in film. And then I started filming and I was like, okay, these are the things that I like. These are the things that I don't. Editing. Mm. And so I started like, okay, when I get bigger projects, let me start like hiring out for editing, right? But I do think it's good to start editing your work. If you're doing any type of video, you need to start by editing your own stuff, because mm-hmm. then you're not going to know how to communicate that to other people. And that's 100%. Just like the long and short of that.
Yep.
You really do need to start doing all the things in your business. I really caution people about being too quick to hire. Because one, you don't know what you're looking for half the time because you haven't done it yourself. You don't know what works efficiently for you because you haven't done it enough to know, like, if you could be saving time doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
And then three, in terms of communication, if I can't communicate something to someone else clearly, then I'm not ready to hire them for the job because mm-hmm. I don't even know what they're going to be doing. So you're just going to be paying people to do something,
yeah.
anything. You're not going to be satisfied necessarily. And I think that is like such a catch-22, is like knowing when to hire,
yeah.
right? And knowing what skills you best bring to your team when you have a team, mm-hmm. right? So talk to me about your experience just like working with crews and stuff like that. I know you've worked on some PBS shows.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit about your experience just working with a crew.
First of all, I love working with a crew. I love working with a small crew because mm-hmm. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
You get, especially if you get with the right people, because I hate to say, y'all get like family, but like, it, you know, it's a lot of fun when you work with people that you really like on yeah. any level.
Yeah.
As far as like kind of like working with the crew and like separating those skill sets,
right.
I think for me, the stuff that I've been hired to do editing wise, I very much kind of, if I'm working with clients that don't edit or have not edit, yeah. I try to convey to them right off the bat the information that I need.
Mm-hmm.
And I give them a base rundown of like what is editing exactly?
Yeah.
What does it involve?
Because
yeah. a lot of times, like if someone reaches out to you for a project,
mm-hmm.
like, hey, how much for this? How much for a video? And you're like, okay.
Tell me what's more.
Exactly, and that's what I go. And I was like, one of the things that I tell them is that the base rundown of like how much time mm-hmm. goes into it. I said, if you give me 5 minutes of video, and you want a minute video for a final version,
mm-hmm.
no problem.
Yeah.
You give me 2 hours and you still want a minute, that takes me longer.
Yeah.
And so I usually, if I work with clients who I haven't worked with before, who are unfamiliar to kind of like how editing actually works, that's the example I give, mm-hmm. is to let them know that the final product has nothing to do with how much things cost.
Correct.
How it has to do with everything that I'm getting ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And so I try to communicate that really well and use that analogy. And since I've started using that analogy, they get a better understanding of it. Mm-hmm. Working with a crew like I have on PBS shows I worked on. I worked on a show last year called Why Am I Like This? About evolutionary biology. It's very mm-hmm. cool. When we have crew meetings, I am the dumbest person in the room. and now I'm working on one called Hungry Planet, which is a food science show, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So on Why Am I Like This? I was the quote-unquote director of photography. Mm-hmm. I don't like that title because I don't feel like I am one. I feel mm-hmm. like I'm a videographer. I'm a camera person.
Right.
I'm not good at crafting light. Mm-hmm. I'm good enough at lighting an interview.
Yeah.
But with that show, they wanted to do a lot of like skits that revolved around genres, mm-hmm. film and TV genres. And some of them I could do. Others I was like, I don't know, man. Like I can light it so we can see everybody. Like I can do that. Mm-hmm. Things won't be dark. And I told them that though. I was like, look, you've got me as this title, but really I'm just kind of a camera person that has lighting. So like mm-hmm. if this is what's in the credits, like I'm fine taking that, but the people I work with on that show, I believe Nehemiah Mabry's been on your show before.
Yes.
Him and I work, that's who I work with on those shows. Mm-hmm. He's the EP. And him and I have worked together for a while. And he's one of those guys that understands the bare bones of stuff, mm-hmm. but is very willing to then learn more about what exactly goes into stuff. And so that's kind of like them. It's not like I'm yeah. talking to him saying like, hey, like, I know you want this, but like, I'm not that skilled at this one thing. I think we can find
yeah.
somebody else to do it. Or I think, hey, we do need like this other thing. Mm-hmm. And so trying to define those skill sets and like my own limitations.
Yeah.
I try to be as open with as possible because I don't want to oversell myself, you know? Like I feel like I'm good at editing.
Yeah.
DP not so much, but I can at least, you know, frame something correctly. I can make exposures good, but yeah. crafting lighting is a whole other thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I gotcha. That's fair. So in your experience as a filmmaker, and whatever that means to you, obviously that means different things depending on the project, but you know, in your experience as a filmmaker, like how do you feel like you're going to get back to creating original work again?
I do. I'm saying that with my mouth. But sometimes
I need some confidence.
But sometimes, exactly. That's the thing. It's like, I'm saying it with my mouth, but like in my head, I'm like, are you? But I feel like that is a struggle that just anybody who has a creative bone in their body or who is trying to make a living, in the artistic world, they have that conversation going on inside them.
Yeah.
For me, I am convinced that is going to happen.
Yeah.
I can't tell you when.
Okay.
Like I don't have the confidence to tell you tomorrow or next year or 10 years because it could be anywhere in between or beyond that.
Yeah.
But for me, what I really want to do and I really am confident is that the work that I will be making will be meaningful with the people that I care about. And that's what I'm really focusing on
yeah.
is not the, I'm going to make enough money to buy a second house or I'm going to
yeah.
sell this thing that'll be IP and that'll yeah. make, you know, passive. That's not what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
I'm interested in making as much of a, I recently had a conversation on my podcast about impact, what kind of impact you want to leave on the people in the world, and not in a legacy standpoint, just like kind of an everyday. Yeah. And I do want to think I want to make a positive impact on quote unquote the world, whether that is this tiny little world inside this room here, mm-hmm. or if it's a bigger room like this city of Durham or the Triangle in the Carolina, goes on and on. But I am convinced and confident in that the stuff that'll be coming out of myself and Scrap Productions will be meaningful and impactful to somebody.
To somebody.
Yeah.
It's a good target audience.
I mean, that's like yes. When I was making documentaries for NC State, I would get, you know, whenever I'd get down, mm-hmm. randomly, I wouldn't think anything of anything that I was doing. I'd be like, this is crap. I'm not doing that good. I'll review an episode I did. I'm like, if I got the color correct, that one shot, like, yeah. idiot. And then somebody will watch it and they'll like tweet at me, hey, great show. They didn't notice.
They don't notice.
Like, why? You know, and so I'm like, Taylor, calm down, dude.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
anybody who is struggling to make something, just know that you are having an impact on someone. Mm-hmm. But you have to really like hold on to the fact that the one is okay.
Yeah.
That just that one person's okay.
Yeah.
To you should take that should feel good to you that you are making an impact on at least one person.
Yeah, for sure. Before I let you get out of here, because I think that is like a great note to end on, I got a couple rapid fire questions for you.
Chip.
Oh, I love this energy. Okay.
I just hope I've answered all the questions correctly.
There's no wrong answers here.
You avoided the question. No, go ahead.
First of all, you graduated in 2009, so we're done with school.
We're way done with school.
We're done with school. Thank Jesus for that. So.
What was the question?
I haven't started yet. Could you give me a second? Oh,
okay. I thought it had to do with recent graduating or something. Okay.
No. All right. You're fine.
Sorry. I'm chomping at the bit.
I see.
It's the coffee.
Yeah. Describe your brand, Scrap Productions, in three words.
You know what? I had these three verbs when I first started, and I think for the most part they're still true. Connect, enlighten, and inspire. Mm. And I think I'm still holding on to that a little bit.
Yeah.
But for me, I think what I'm pivoting toward now is care, creativity, and badass.
My anaconda will accept those answers. So thank you for that. Okay. What's the biggest lesson you've learned as an entrepreneur?
that I hate running a business. But I want to preface that as saying it's like I very much am a person who never thought that I never had the drive to run my own business. Mm. I'm running my own business out of necessity because I want to be an artist and a storyteller, and that's what I'm doing. But biggest lesson though is you can't do everything yourself.
Mm. Good one. I like that. Who is a creative figure that you look up to and why?
Oh, wow. The first one that comes to my mind is Anthony Bourdain. Because his television work really lifted me out of a funk at a time that I needed it to be. Broadened my horizons to a whole world that I just was not aware that existed through his the work that he was doing on television. And a lot of the stuff that I do want to make is modeled after what him and his crew did on whether it was No Reservation, Parts Unknown, whatever. Yeah. So that's the first answer that comes to my mind.
Yeah, love that. Shout out to the foodies. Last question. What's your favorite tool or business resource that you find yourself constantly recommending?
Toggle. Do you know about Toggle?
Mm-mm.
It's just a timekeeping app. And I started using it, my partner used it for her business, and I started using it when I had paid interns, because I was like, hey, we gotta log your hours, you gotta deserve to get paid. Like, and so now I use it to keep track of my own hours, both from a billing standpoint and from the fact that like, what did I do this week? And so it was all a blur. I was like, oh, I spent 20 hours on this one project. Or I said, oh, I did this. So I would say Toggle, T-O-G-G-L.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
That's all for today's episode. And if you can't wait for the next episode, you can subscribe to our paid membership on Substack to get exclusive content like outtakes, bloopers, after show thoughts, and more. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on your app of choice or like this video on YouTube. We'll catch you in the next episode.